Great, we would appreciate it, and we'll open up the January 10th meeting of the Atascadero City Council. I call the meeting to order. Councilman Clay, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Join me. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Kelly?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Next on our agenda is a presentation to be made by our police chief, Gerald Haley. Gerald, would you like to take the podium, please?
How about now? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate you providing me with this opportunity, and members of the council, thank you as well. It really is an exciting opportunity for me to be able to be here tonight. I got the thumbs up from Russ Thompson, so I must be doing something right already. We're able tonight to do a couple of different presentations on behalf of the police department, and the first one that we are going to do is a presentation for the appointment of our two new police chaplain positions. We have a tremendous number of volunteers at our department. We don't normally introduce them this way, but this really does mark the reestablishment of a program for us that's been absent from our department for a couple of years. And so it's created a little bit more excitement, and we wanted to do this in a little bit more of an exciting way as well. Certainly, the chaplain program is one of the parts of our strategic plan that we wanted to implement over the course of the next several years. And so accomplishing this really is an achievement of that goal. I would be remiss if I didn't point out that Officer Kelly Netz, I think she's here somewhere. She's standing for two in the back. She really is kind of the key player in putting this together. She was the one that went out and addressed members of the clergy within the community and sought people who might be willing to fill this role for us, found the potential candidates, interviewed them, did background checks, and all of that sort of thing. So just to publicly acknowledge her and say thank you very much for your hard work is appropriate here. And I'll have them stand up, but I'd like you to be introduced to Pastor Tom Gaddis of the Father's House and Pastor Rick Comstock. And if they would just kind of join me up here. A little bit about them both. They are both long-time fixtures in this community. Pastor Gaddis has been the pastor of Father's House since moving to Atascadero in 1975. I shouldn't have said that year, I'm sorry. And Pastor Comstock has been the pastor of the Atascadero First Assembly Church since 1987. Both of them are familiar faces and should be to you as well. A little bit about the program. It's designed to be a volunteer service providing counseling and spiritual and emotional support to all the members of the department and their fleet undertaken. Here's a little bit of the idea of the types of incidents that they'll be responding to as police chaplains. Death notifications, child death incidents, suicides, officer-involved shootings, standoff situations, serious accidents, major dispute situations, and then any other number of incidents in which the pastoral assistance by them is needed. We're hopeful that there might be some good things, too. Who knows, maybe they'll even be called upon to perform a wedding for one of our officers or something like that. We can always hope for the good things. We expect, and here's some key things for you to know. We expect a lot out of them, and so I expect them not to take this position lightly, and I don't want you to see it as that either. With that in mind, Pastor Gaddis, I'm going to have you kind of come up over here. Pastor Gaddis, is it your intent to faithfully serve the members of the Atascadero Police Department and the community of Atascadero in the capacity of police chaplain? And will you publicly acknowledge that at this time by saying, I will, in front of this group?
I will.
Thank you, sir. Pastor Comstock, I'll have you join him. Pastor Comstock, is it your intent to faithfully serve the members of the Atascadero Police Department and the community of Atascadero in the capacity of police chaplain? And will you publicly acknowledge that at this time by saying, I will?
I will.
Pastor Comstock, thank you very much. Let me be the first to welcome you both to our community. Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And they'll be available in the back for members of the media who want to ask them some questions. If you would choose to do that, they'll slip out in just a few moments after our next presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Gerald. That's a really good addition for the police department and our city that we will all appreciate. I believe the next presentation is yours also.
All police department all the time is our new motto. So these are exciting nights for me. This is a large portion of why I took this job, and I am very excited to be here to present this award tonight as well. Sergeant Allen is here, and I'm going to have him kind of make his way over to me as we start talking here. Oh, thank you very much. It's my great privilege to be able to present the department involved in a life-threatening incident at the time the assistance was rendered, and it must be shown that the action taken by the member saved or sustained the life of the victim. Well, tonight we recognize Sergeant Joe Allen, and we are going to present him with the life-saving award based on his actions that were undertaken on December 7th of last year. A little bit about what occurred on that incident. On December 7th, 2011, Sergeant Joe Allen was attending court at the county courthouse in San Luis Obispo. While in an office adjacent to the lobby, Sergeant Allen heard someone call out, "Call 911 from the other end of the doorway. It sounds like a TV show already a little bit there to me, but he immediately responded once he heard that. He observed an unresponsive man on the floor beneath the metal detector. Sergeant Allen immediately stepped into a leadership role, summoning an automated external defibrillator, an AED device that were there at the courthouse, and medical personnel. He was quickly joined by members of the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department and began to assess the man's condition. Sergeant Allen found that the subject was in cardiac arrest and began CPR chest compressions in an effort to preserve the victim's life. Sergeant Allen continued chest compressions and worked with the Sheriff's Department to utilize an AED device on the victim. The AED device was used three separate times until the subject's pulse and breathing returned. During the time it was used, Sergeant Allen continued chest compressions in between each of the activations of the AED device. The subject was later transported to the Sierra Vista Regional Medical Center, where his condition was stabilized, and I'm told by the doctors there that it was largely due to the actions taken by Sergeant Allen and the deputies there at the scene, the reason for his life being sustained. I was talking with his wife earlier. She happens to be a nurse. I said, you know, might be cool for you guys. You get to do this all the time, and doctors get to do this all the time, but this is neat stuff for us. This really is an accomplishment of our mission in law enforcement to have a hand in preserving people's lives, and we are very excited about it. Just so happens that Sergeant Allen is responsible for training our department in the use of AEDs. He instituted the program. All right. And really, that's what played a large role in this. Had it not been for his quick actions and the actions of the deputies involved, this victim may not have survived in this case. For this reason, it gives me great pleasure to present Sergeant Allen with the life-saving award. The award tonight consists of a contribution in saving the life of a citizen on December 7th, 2011. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate your help tonight. We'll get to you in a second. While everybody's up here, I'll also introduce Sheriff Parkinson. He, along with Sergeant Allen and the deputies that were involved in this incident, will also be doing some recognition at the Board of Supervisors meeting next week. But he's here. I'd just like him to be able to come up and give a presentation as well.
Well, thank you, Chief. I'm going to. I have no idea which way I should face it.
Get out over here because we want to get a picture taken
with Joe and the city council.
We need a good lecture.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I just want to add that over the past year, certainly since I've been in office, we've established a great bond with the Atascadero Police Department. We spent quite a bit of time up here on a couple of major incidents over the last year, and we've developed this this better than normal relationship. I think Chief Haley and I go way back, so I think that's just going to grow, that relationship. Most of the time, our opportunities are very much law enforcement related, that we collaborate on issues. This is one of those rare circumstances where we're collaborating and kind of taking the fire department's thunder and doing something that's different. But these types of events really overshadow everything we do. When somebody reports a member of the public down and need a medical aid, it's our duty to respond and act accordingly. Not only did Sergeant Allen and the deputies responded, but they really are credited with saving their life, or this gentleman's life, and that's an amazing thing. That's something that Sergeant Allen will carry with him for the rest of his career, and something that he should be very proud of. So I just wanted to say on behalf of the Sheriff's Office, we are presenting you with a life-saving...
I think while we're here, we want to thank the sheriff for coming up and making his presentation. And I think at this time, Commander Gazelle. I believe this will be the last city council meeting that you'll be here as our commander. And I believe with the 17th, you're taking office as the chief in San Luis. And we just really, really want to thank you for all you've done for our police department. And I think you stepped it up a notch. And I know you were very instrumental in finding Gerald for us. And we just want to thank you for the job you did and wish you the best in the future. And I know with Gerald and Ian and everybody else, we'll have really good protection and service in the county. Just want to thank you again.
Thank you, Mayor. I didn't expect this opportunity to come up here and say a few words, but I would like to express my appreciation over the last 2.5 years and the phenomenal experience I've had working with and for the city of Atascadero. It's called a Freudian slip, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. I mean, the experience here and the people that I've met over the last two plus years, I will take with me for certainly the rest of my career, and I appreciate that. I leave here with the peace of mind that Chief Haley, phenomenal leader, and couldn't ask for a better chief to lead this department forward. So thank you very much.
Congratulations, by the way.
Congratulations, and thank you. Right. Next on the agenda is the community forum is reserved for persons,
Mayor Kelly.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is updates from the city manager.
Mayor and council, thank you. Let me start with some really good news. The Que Pasa restaurant is open for business. The food's great and the experience is wonderful. We hope they do well. They have a great location next to the theater. It was I had an opportunity to go there last Friday. It's very nice. Be sure to drop in. The second item I want to talk to you about, I'm very proud of the police department and certainly glad to have Chief Haley and appreciate what Chief Gazelle has done for us. I want to brag about the fire department for a couple of seconds. Our fire department worked with state agencies, including the Department of Transportation and the CHP, to develop a new system for fire apparatus. There's a check-in system that's been frustrating for many years now that our staff took on and created a new DOT pre-trip inspection for its part of the daily routine, what we have to do with our vehicles. And by developing this new, they actually brought the state agencies in and crafted this program. And by developing this lockout, tag-out system, a piece of equipment can be deemed ready for emergency response and then tagged and locked out. This is going to be a savings of 5 to 8 hours a week in our fire department. So they continue to do great work over there. Hopefully you heard them on the radio today talking about the CERT program, but I'm very proud of what's going on in the Atascadero Fire Department. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about the redevelopment issues. There is an item on the agenda tonight about redevelopment, but I just want to highlight what all is going on since the Supreme Court decision. As you know, last year the state legislature passed legislation as part of the budget, actually, as part of the state budget, two pieces of legislation, one that would eliminate redevelopment and a second that cities or that redevelopment agencies could buy their way back into redevelopment by paying the state a portion of their tax increment financing. The League of Cities and the California Redevelopment Agency filed suit with the state Supreme Court challenging that the state's actions were unconstitutional because of the recently adopted Proposition 22. The Supreme Court's now ruled in that case, as we all know. The state does have the power to eliminate redevelopment. They do not have the power to take local revenue. And in fact, that's left even more questions because the bills did go hand in hand. And so there's far more questions today than answers with just how we wind down redevelopment operations. This is a serious blow to Atascadero. Since 1999, many commercial developments, lake park improvements, downtown beautification, and other projects have been funded by the redevelopment agency. Redevelopment generates approximately $3 million a year, which we've been using to improve our community. Just a sampling of the things we've accomplished in a variety of pictures. We're working on the restoration of City Hall. We constructed the Lewis Avenue Bridge. We provided financial assistance to Galaxy Theaters. We've maintained, we've done maintenance of the downtown, including landscaping, trash removal, fountain upkeep, median and public area maintenance. We've renovated the sunken gardens, including accessibility. It's now available for people to get in that otherwise could not have used the park. It provides business stimulus funds for permit assistance, facade improvements, restaurant assistance, improved signage. We created and funded the Main Street program and related events such as Winter Wonderland and Street Art Stroll. We purchased the historic bakery building, which moved the adult-oriented business away from downtown, and we later sold that property at a profit. We funded the restoration of the Rustling Bacchants and the statue from the Sunken Gardens. We've constructed a variety of streetscape improvements, including medians, urns, and hopefully still a banner system that will be installed. We did purchase this building for a temporary City Hall during the earthquake rebuild of City Hall. We funded the creek restoration right out the back door and received an award from the Public Works Association for our work in an environmentally sensitive area. We funded affordable housing projects, and we funded the Atascadero Tourism Program, including market events, Visit Atascadero, and our involvement in the Savor Central Coast. Redevelopment funds have employed hundreds of people in Atascadero, and they've greatly improved our community, and we're thankful for that. I'll keep the council and the community posted on the events to occur. We have our first action tonight, which we need to take action before January 13th, a report on if we are willing to become the successor agency for redevelopment, which we're recommending approval. There will be many more actions between now and August 1st when the wind down is supposed to be completed. And
I would just like to add that this is a community forum. It's not a question and answer period session. We're here to answer all of your questions. If you do have a question, the city clerk will be taking notes of what your question is and who the speaker is. And if you want to pursue an answer to your question, the city clerk will be available anytime to answer your questions and give you any documentation you may need at the front desk at City Hall. We're here to work with you. It's just that the city council meetings are the business sessions for the city, and sometimes these debates go on and on and on, and it makes our city council meetings go on late into the evening when none of us are at the top of our game. So we're going to try to restrict the questions and answers, but still be willing to provide all the information that you need in the future. And with that, we'll open up the community forum. Or is there one of the chaplains present that would like to make the first presentation? If not, any speakers can address the podium. State your name, please. Oh, if I could just, one time, the way these timers work, if you're new here, is you have 3 minutes to speak. The first 2.5 minutes is indicated by the green light on the little box over there and at the podium. After 2.5 minutes, there's a yellow light that comes on. And at 3 minutes, a red light will come on, and there will be a little tone that indicates that your 3 minutes is up. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. I'm Grenda Ernst from the Friends of the Library. And I'd like to update you on what's happening with the expansion campaign for the new library. This morning, the Board of Supervisors approved the contract for the architects, Ravat Albrecht, to work on the interior of the library. So that's a milestone for us, and we're very excited about that. We are closing in on our goal in the campaign. We have less than $60,000 to go before we get to the place where we would be ready to begin construction. After that money, we would need to raise $225,000 for furniture, fixture, and equipment. But we are just about there. We continue to have donations and pledges. One of our latest challenges is a $10,000 challenge from Mary Bianco from the Mocha Foundation. And we welcome anybody that would like to meet that challenge. We also have people that are continuing to participate in the Allen Pledge, pledging $50 or $100. I believe that covers my update.
Fine. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Nice to hear that the library is going forward at a
yes.
nice pace.
Yeah.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of City Council. First of all, Bob, congratulations, belated by a few weeks on your election to mayor.
Thank you.
Well deserved. You're going to do a great job. I'm up here for two reasons. Number one, my name is Chuck Ward. I live in Atascadero. I want to bring your attention to the fact that tomorrow at 1:30, there is an important meeting at the City Council at the Board of Supervisors chambers. The so-called waste management group, who is attempting to ban plastic bags, is going to have a full hearing and the final vote. I'm going to go there, hopefully to restrain a rant, but I will add my voice to the thousands of citizens in the city and this county that are going to be affected by this. And it's a bad law, and it's ridiculous that it should come up. This is second only to the issue that I think is coming down the track in all communities, and that is the issue of the mud puddle shrimp, otherwise known as the fairy shrimp. Give it a little panache. When I was a kid, we used to call these brine shrimp. And you could buy them in pet stores. You put them in salt water. They hatch, and you feed them to your tropical fish. When my kids were growing up, we bought these. They were called sea monkeys. Years ago, my partners and I owned some property in Merced. I can't tell you how many projects were shut down, delayed, because of the issue of what they call the mud puddle shrimp. Wherever there was a track by a truck or car on the edge of the road that had a little water in it after rainstorm, these dormant little eggs that sometimes were embedded in the the authorities sprayed these to keep mosquito population down. This is going to be used now to block every project that's coming down the track, and it's going to take 2 years to do the study on this. So just keep alert, write some letters to the editor, and let's head it off at the pass. Thank you.
Good evening, the City Council.
Good evening to the City Council. Happy New Year to everybody.
Hope everybody had a good holiday. Again, I'm here to talk about Oak Ridge Estates.
State your name, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Mitch Paskin. I live in Atascadero. But I don't know if anybody heard, but there was a head-on collision up on Los Altos Road the other day. Then I noticed there was some dots around that blind curve that I assume the city did it. Then I talked to a neighbor of mine, a deputy sheriff. He said that he was run off the road in that blind curve, and he had talked to the city, and they had come up and put those dots down. These dots are fine, but they don't go far enough, and they have the situation's been ignored for a long time. And I warned the city about this, about the dangers of Los Altos Road and San Marcos Road, and the speeds and the danger of walking your dog or trying to drive your car in that area. There's been other incidents. I've talked to the neighbors. They talked to me about it. When the projects first got started and they were pouring the retaining walls, a cement truck went over the side. It happened to be on my property. So I inquired about having the road striped, and I submitted a letter, as I was told to do, to the Public Works. It was ignored. No striping occurred. I have a copy of the letter. It was actually 3 years almost to the day, time-stamped by the city of Atascadero in the office. So, and nothing's happened. 3 years later, we find a little couple dots in the road. And I don't know that we're going to have to wait for a head-on collision or somebody to get really hurt at each blind corner on Los Altos and San Marcos Road. The problems created when the project was approved, leaving, rural hillside local roads, 2 miles of it leading to the project, not capable of handling the traffic. Again, there's a very easy way to solve the problem if the road was cut directly from the project to Highway 41. And if you went out San Marcos Court and into the easement at Escobroso, it's a knife-safe intersection down there. There's no riparian areas. I've written to both the staff and the city council twice and to the developer about all this. It's nothing new. So there's bad things are going to happen up there, and somebody's going to get hurt. Okay? And that road should be considered. And the city council and the staff have created this problem, and I'm going to make sure that the city staff and the city council are going to own this problem. Okay? When something bad happens, people are going to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
Good evening. My name is Deborah Paskin, and I live in Atascadero near the Oak Ridge Estates, located off of Highway 41. I'm concerned about the safety of all residents who live on Los Altos and San Marcos Roads, inside and outside of Oak Ridge Estates. I walk with my two small dogs on these roads, and what was once an enjoyable experience is becoming dangerous. I must be on high alert for cars. I try to find a time to walk when traffic is less. I cross from one side of the road to the other and try to avoid as many blind curves as possible, but I have encountered quite a few close calls, and I'm not alone in this. You can talk to any one of our neighbors, and they have their own hair-raising stories, whether driving or walking. why should I not be able to walk in my own neighborhood? Why do I have to load my dogs in the car, drive 6 or so miles to find a safe place to walk? The reason we moved to this location was so that we could enjoy the beauty outside our front door. Because of current traffic on Los Altos and San Marcos roads, with more traffic to come, our luck will run out and something ugly will happen. The roads are narrow and the blind curves plentiful. Striping might be helpful, but again, the roads are so narrow and people drive so fast, they end up crossing over the stripes in areas that have been marked. Currently, there is only one way inside, or one way in and out of Oak Ridge Estates. The developer plans a second road from Oak Ridge to Senegal. This potential road is incredibly unsafe and, when completed, virtually unusable. I'm here to implore the City Council to be proactive and require the developer of Oak Ridge Estates to abandon the building of the road to Senegal and build a road from the development to Highway 41. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, please.
Hello, my name is Ron Rothman. I live in the Tascadero. I want to start by saying that I get no pleasure from the remarks that I'm about to give. I even debated whether I should was worth my time to do so. But in the end, I felt that I would be part of the problem if I didn't. I think most people see some dysfunction to a certain degree at all levels of government. None of us is perfect, so some of that is to be expected. But part of the problem, in my opinion, is due to the process we use to solve problems and issues. The process has contributed to the problems we as a country are experiencing. A case in point was the discussion of at last council meeting concerning the Del Rio EIR. A large number of people spoke on the issue. Not all, however, spoke directly to the issue. A comment was made that unless you lived in Atascadero for at least 20 years, you shouldn't have the right to express your opinion. We were given a lesson on the philosophy of John Locke. One man commented on how gray his hair had become. And none of this speaks to the merit of the issue under discussion. I think the public, including myself, needs to make more of an effort to educate ourselves on the issues and make relevant comments, if we have them. This will contribute to a better process and a better outcome. My biggest concern, however, was not with the public, but with the five of you sitting on the council. There's a saying that action speaks louder than words. In this case, all we have to go on is the actions, because none of you uttered a word. This item, the public spoke on for probably over 2 hours, yet not one of you offered a thought. Either you had no thoughts on the subject, or you didn't care to share your thoughts with the people who made an effort to come here and share their thoughts. If your intent was to tell people, especially those who spoke for the first time, that coming to a council meeting is a waste of their time, you probably couldn't have done a better job. I really think you all should be ashamed of your lack of communication, but I know that's probably not a reality, but that also speaks volumes. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good evening, Mayor Kelly, members of the City Council. I'm Len Colomarino, a Tascadero resident. I wanted to pick up the subject that was discussed by the city manager relating to the court decision concerning the redevelopment agency. There is a lot of confusion in the minds of many people in the public about the meaning of that decision and its implications. And I understand that a lot of legal decisions aren't so clear, and this one I think falls in that category. And just how it's going to play out, I know, is quite uncertain. There are, however, a bunch of projects that are already in progress. And I got the impression that many of those, if not most or even all of those projects, are not imperiled by the impending demise of the RDA. For example, the restoration of the City Hall, that project, and some of the others that are significant. I say I hope they're not imperiled, but I don't feel 100% certain, and I think there are a lot of people in the community who aren't certain. We need some reassurance. We need to be told at least what is known not to be in danger. I realize there may be some things that certainty is not present on and that definite statements can't be made about. But on those things that definite statements can be made, I think it would be useful to have a very ringing announcement saying that these projects are not in danger and that at least certain areas of the redevelopment agency's activities in the past or pending projects created by the redevelopment agency are not going to be destroyed. And then any other enlightenment that can be provided to us would be greatly appreciated. And again, I know that something like this is not easy to analyze and explain. As a lawyer myself, I know I've encountered a lot of legal decisions that raised more questions than they answered. But some effort, I think, is warranted to try to get the word out and to provide as much reassurance as can be provided, along with some indication of what may be down the road. So that's what I'd like to present to you for this evening, and thank you very much.
Thank you. I think earlier in the evening, the city manager said he would keep the citizens and city council and everybody updated as to the developments that are ongoing with the court decision. Like you say, there's so many unknowns now, but we do have some projects that are guaranteed to go on, and we'll get that information out to the community. Thank you.
Good evening. Jim Shanna, Tascadero. I'm here to speak to the vote tomorrow for the waste management, and whoever represents us as a city, go there and vote against this. And I hope that it does not pass. You know, from what I understand, it's they're only talking about the actual plastic bags that we load our groceries into, whether it be at the grocery store, at say Kmart or whatever. But I find it highly ironic that they do nothing about the bags that we actually put our produce in when we grab a plastic bag to put our produce in, at the vegetables and fruit and all that, or you put your poultry or meat in a bag. That's not included in that, from what I understand. So whether this is a feel-good law or something they want to pass or someone wants to flex their muscle, I don't know. But whoever represents us as a city, please go and vote against that. And if possible, if it does pass, that maybe we as a city can have an amendment to that, that we don't have to participate in it. And I don't know if that's possible, but that's something maybe we can look into. And then one other comment on Mr. Rothman, and I appreciate his words and what he said, but I do remember clearly that the city attorney telling you guys when that issue came up that you were not to discuss it or talk about it, and that the public was welcome to talk and speak to it, but you weren't. So I think maybe he might have missed that part. I don't know. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. But you guys did your job there. You didn't do anything wrong by not commenting because you were instructed not to. And that also just brings me to another thing is I think it's been 5 or 6 years now that we've had this minority group here in Atascadero that's pretty much shed a negative light on our city often, rather in the print media, radio, and if you go back and read some of those things and listen to those shows, that a lot of those things were brought to and spoke to by the very people, and a lot of the things that were quoted to were the very people that kept there speak negatively of our city. And that's fine, but there's a lot of good things that go on with the city, and I think as a city and as citizens of the city, we should work to grow together and work together instead of coming up here and being divisive and deceitful and misleading. You know, just like opposed Walmart is now Save Atascadero, you know, so that makes them one beautiful, pretty swan now, but no, there's still that deceitful, misleading, and divisive mud hen, as far as I'm concerned. So, I just think as we turn the corner this year that you guys keep moving forward what you're doing. And we need to come together as a community and get beyond these things. And I know we're going to speak to the RDA stuff later. I have comments on that as well. And I kind of know where they're going to stand as well when it comes to that because they've already made their Colors showing a while back when that came up. So anyway, just keep up the good work. And the city staff, my hat's off to you guys and stuff you did the last few years since 2008, what you did to bring the good things that are happening downtown. So keep up the good work, and you have my support and a lot of the people in the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? Mr. Brendler?
Good evening, Council. My name is Mike Brendler, a resident of Atascadero. Last year, the Atascadero Mutual Water Company raised the rates 15%, and there was considerable grumbling, including grumbling in this very room. You, the members of the council, discussed the potential of passing the rate increases related to water consumption at the parks and youth sports fields onto the user groups. And members of the public, including myself, pointed out that that was unfair to the families who are trying to keep their kids in sports programs, which are already fairly expensive. Presumably, you've seen that the water company is, quote unquote, exploring another rate increase of 7.5%, and the board of directors of the water company is meeting tomorrow night to discuss this. I would encourage the public to go to the meeting at the water company and say enough already. I mean, think about it. The public just sustained a 2.75% increase in city sanctioned garbage rates, and now a potential of a 7.5% increase in water rates after increasing them 15% last year. For those members of the public who want to voice their opinion, the water company is located 5005 El Camino across from the Kmart, and the meeting starts at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow night. But back to the discussion that the council had back in May. You probably remember that. In the face of potential of raising rates to the user groups, Council Member O'Malley formed an ad hoc committee. I believe that it was formed the preceding month in April. The idea was to try and resolve the issues with the Water Company Board of Directors. The committee was comprised of Roberto Fonzi and Bob Kelly, with assistance from staff member Russ Thompson. In May, you, Mayor Kelly, suggested that the committee had met, and you used the words suggesting that in the near future, we will come up with something that is workable for both sides. You indicated you were optimistic about that. Since then, there's been no report back to the public, and now I'm led to believe that there was no agreement or resolution because the Water Company Board refused further meetings. I'd like that clarified for us tonight. Be mindful of the fact that I have posed that question to the city clerk, and I know you don't like to answer the public's questions sometimes, and you want to hide behind the aprons of our city administration. But, it's time that you need to be a little bit forthright and start answering some of these simple questions. And one of the questions is, did the water board refuse to meet with the city in trying to resolve this issue? You owe that to the citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? If not, the community forum portion of the meeting is now closed. And once again, I would like to reiterate, if anybody has any questions, you can direct them to the city clerk. Or even if you're not in attendance tonight and you're watching on TV, anytime you have any questions, we are here to answer your questions to the best of our ability. Next on the agenda is the public hearings. The first public hearing is an appeal of a decision by the Planning Commission. And Warren, will you be making the presentation?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This item before you is, as you mentioned, an appeal of a decision that was made by the Planning Commission in December. It regards the expansion of an existing residential care facility that's located at 9525 Galena Court. It was a conditional use permit that was amended by the Planning Commission's decision. A little bit of background on this facility. Originally in 1999, Paradise Valley Care Facility was established at that time. It was a six-patient residential care facility in a single-family home. Under the city zoning ordinance, which is consistent with state law, residential care facilities of six patients or less are exempt from any CUP or discretionary approvals by a city. Once they exceed six, then they can be subject to a CUP, which is how our city zoning ordinance is written. So in 2007, they did want to expand the facility to 8 patients. At that point, they did apply for a conditional use permit, which was approved by the city's planning commission. The following year, in 2008, they applied to amend that CUP to increase the patient count from 8 to 10. That was approved in 2008. So that is what the current approval for the property is a 10-patient residential care facility. This year, 2011, they have applied for another CUP amendment, this time to increase the patient number of patients to 15. As I mentioned, that was heard by the Planning Commission in December. The Planning Commission did vote 5-2 to approve that amendment. Following the approval, the neighbors, Pat Stone, did file an appeal, so that then automatically brings this item to the City Council to make the final decision, which is what we'll be doing tonight. So a little bit of information just on where this project's located. It's on Galena Court, which is a cul-de-sac located off of Llano Road, which is right off of Santa Lucia Road. So this is where Graves Creek is. The Graves Creek Bridge is located right here. This is an aerial photo of the site. There's Galena Court. This is the property in question. There is the location of the house. There's a swimming pool in the backyard. It's a fairly large parcel. These are the neighboring lots that are also on Galena Court, all large lot residential. The zoning is residential suburban, which is a 2.5 to 10 acre minimum lot size. General plan designations, rural estates. As I mentioned, this is a small subdivision that was created in 1988. There's 6 lots that are all on Galena Court, which is about an 800-foot-long cul-de-sac. The average lot size in the neighborhood is 2.6 acres. Galena Court is a non-maintained city road, so that means the residents that live on the street are responsible for the maintenance of the street. When the tract or subdivision was approved originally, the developer did create a homeowners association through the CCNRs that are recorded against all the lots. Although it's our understanding that although the association was created, there's been very few, if any, meetings, and there's been no function of the homeowners association as far as we can tell from the testimony we've heard from the neighbors. Here's a close-up aerial photo. You can see a little bit better what's going on the site. Here's the house. You can see there's the driveway where there's some off-street parking located here. The owners also created a second off-street parking area here, and then there's additional parking that's available behind the house in this location. There's landscaping in the front yards, and as I mentioned, there's a pool, outdoor amenities behind the house. This is a photograph of the front, looking from Galena Court toward the house. This is the backyard area, a picture of the pool area. As I mentioned, the existing facility is a single-family home, which is what a residential care is allowed to be located within. There are 10 existing clients. These are clients that have either Alzheimer's or some form of dementia. All the parking for the facility is provided off-street, so employee and visitor parking is accommodated off-street. Currently, there's 10 parking spaces off-street that are available. The operation has 2 employees per shift that are required by state law. So a shift is 8 hours, so that means you have 3 shifts a day. So basically 6 employees a day are required to operate this facility, plus the owners that live on site. The proposed facility expansion, which is what the amendment before the Planning Commission focused on, was to increase the maximum number of clients to 15 clients, which is an increase of 5. There is a common room within the house that would be converted into 3 additional bedrooms. The existing envelope or size of the house would not be increased, so the expansion would happen within the envelope of the existing building. There would be 1 additional employee per shift that would be required. So instead of having 6 employees per daily shift, we would be up to 9 employees per daily shifts. Looking at the site plan, this is the area of the proposed conversion. So there is the property. Here's the house, and these lines indicate the rooms within the house. So this is that common room area, which would be the area that's proposed to be changed. This is just a blow-up of the house. So this is the area in yellow that's proposed to be changed, and this is the floor plan of the proposed area. So right now there's one room here, and then this is a large common room. There'd be two new bedrooms created here facing toward Galena. And then this would be an expanded semi-private room for, it appears, two people here in the back. So that would be the area to accommodate the additional residents. In terms of consistency with the zoning code, I did mention that with a conditional use permit, a residential care facility of 15 residents is permitted under the zoning ordinance, provided the Planning Commission grants a CUP. The zoning code does require parking for these sorts of facilities. The requirement is one space for every four beds, so four parking spaces would be required. There's more than that already provided on site. The building currently meets and exceeds all the building code requirements, fire department, and emergency requirements. It is a fire-sprinklered building. One of the issues that we did look at was the issue of traffic and circulation and the impact that would have on the neighborhood. There was no evidence that there'd be a significant increase in daily traffic. The residents that live in this building, as I mentioned, have Alzheimer's and dementia. They do not drive or own vehicles at this point, so they will not be generating any trips. The only real source of additional trips will be those three additional shift workers per day and potentially some additional visitors on occasion. As I mentioned, there is adequate locations on the property for visitors and the employees. We did add a condition of approval that did say that the residents cannot own or operate cars on the site in case, for whatever reason in the future, there are people that live there that could drive a car, because we don't want that to become a source of additional parking or traffic. So it's limited to visitors and employees that are able to drive and park at the site. Here's a blow-up just showing where the parking is. So you have the five parking spaces in front, two behind, and three over here on this pad. There's Galena Court. So as I mentioned, this item was heard by the Planning Commission last month. The Planning Commission did hear testimony from a number of the neighbors. There was a lot of discussion that focused on the compatibility of this use with the neighborhood. There was also a lot of discussion about the CCNRs. One of the provisions in the CCNRs is that the uses in this tract are limited to single-family uses. What was discussed at the Planning Commission is that the city does not enforce CCNRs. Those are agreements among the property owners, and it's incumbent on the property owners themselves to enforce those. We enforce the zoning ordinance, not CCNRs. That said, courts have often or usually found that residential care and single family are one and the same use. So clearly, our zoning ordinance says residential care is allowed in this zone, and that would be consistent if we can make the required findings, which the Planning Commission was able to make. As we mentioned, they also looked at the issue of traffic and parking. The Planning Commission did make the required findings and approved the project on a 5-2 vote. We have, as I mentioned, received an appeal from the neighbor. The neighbor's justification for the appeal is that they believe this expansion is incompatible with the existing character of the neighborhood. They are concerned about traffic and the number of visitors coming and going to the site. They're concerned about parking impacts on the neighborhood. They're concerned with the overall intensity of the use, the number of bedrooms that would be added to a residential unit that could then be converted back to a residential house. So in terms of staff's analysis of this, we do believe that as proposed, this amendment is consistent with the city's regulations and the zoning ordinance. There have been conditions added that will limit the parking and number of trips that come and go from the site to ensure neighborhood compatibility. This would be the end of expansion to this facility. 15 residents is as many as you can put in a residential structure under the building code. Any further expansion would change the occupancy to an I or an institutional designation, which would be a different type of structure with different types of regulations. The key to the decision that the Planning Commission made and that the City Council will need to uphold tonight if they choose to is the 5 findings for approval of a conditional use permit. These were the findings that the Planning Commission were able to make to approve this project. They found that it was consistent with the general plan, that it was consistent with the city's zoning requirements, that it would not be detrimental to the general public or the neighbors that reside in the area, that it was not inconsistent with the character of the immediate neighborhood, and as it was conditioned, it would not generate excessive traffic that couldn't be handled by the local streets. If the City Council chooses to uphold the Planning Commission's decision, which is what staff's recommending, the City Council will have to make these 5 findings. If the City Council chooses to grant the appeal, it will have to be based on denial or the inability to make one of these five findings. So staff is recommending that the City Council adopt Draft Resolution A that would deny the appeal and uphold the Planning Commission's approval of the amendment to the conditional use permit. That will conclude staff's report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Warren. At this time, I would just like to see if there's any questions, and questions only. We'll come back for discussion, and I'll start with Jerry, and we'll just work our way down.
Yeah, I have one for the time being. The number 15, is that a state requirement, or is that?
Well, what happens is it is basically a state requirement that in the building code that's adopted by the state, the most residents you can have in a residential rated structure would be 15. Once you get over that in terms of care patients, it turns into what's called an institutional, more like a hospital type use, which requires a different type of structure, and it would require significant modification to the building to meet the I or the institutional designation.
And it would require different zoning also?
Not necessarily, but it would require significant changes that then we would have to analyze whether it was still consistent with a residential neighborhood.
Okay, and other than inside remodeling, there's no changes to the outside, no?
No, there's no changes to the exterior.
Right. Okay, thank you, Warren.
I have a question regarding the parking. One of the complaints that was on the appeal was that there might be on-street parking, but when I read the report, it looked like all of the parking was off the street. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the way the project's conditioned, and as you can see from this slide, there are 10 off-street parking spaces available, so we don't believe that on-street parking will be a concern with this project.
Is the parking going to be clearly marked so that visitors would know to park there?
That would probably be a good question for the applicant in terms of exactly how these are marked. I'm not exactly sure about that.
And this may again be a question for the applicant, but I'm going to assume that there's going to be some services that are brought to those patients, let's say physical therapists or ministers or others that come to the house. Are those accommodated with the parking?
I believe they would be easily accommodated with the parking, but it would probably be good to check with the applicant and find out exactly what they expect those trips to be.
And I'm assuming, again, that the people that are in the home are closely supervised, so they're not wandering through the neighborhood or causing any neighborhood issues. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's why they have to have the 3 full-time employees for the 15. So I think it's like a 1-to-5 ratio, basically.
Thank you.
Tom?
Bob, I want to apologize for my phone going off.
Okay.
I cut her down now, okay?
Okay.
So why didn't you take my call? A couple questions is, with the conversion, there is no common area for clients, guests, or staff
The common area, there still will be a common area located here, but it looks like it'll be reduced by about 50% from what it is today.
And there's no particular requirements. I am familiar with the group home, six-bed, up 10 to 15-bed. Any requirements for activity rooms or any other areas besides the bedrooms?
Well, there's not city requirements. There are state requirements. It's our understanding that they'll be, this will all be state licensed and approved, so the state will require that this facility be consistent with those standards.
And what is the total count of bedrooms after this remodel?
Let's see, I believe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think it's either 7 or 8, but you probably check with the applicant to find the exact count.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Warren, when it comes to all the work that's going to be done, that is all going to be done by, you know, permit and up to code and all of that, correct?
Yeah, all the work will require city building permits, will be inspected by the city building inspectors and fire department.
And prior to this CUP for this increase, has there been any problems or issues that have come to the city's attention of this care facility that, in any way, shape, or form?
We don't have any records of any code enforcement complaints.
Or neighbor complaints or any other kind of complaints?
Yeah, no complaints from neighbors that were filed officially as code enforcement complaints.
Thank you.
Yes, you'd mentioned that this building is sprinkled. There are a number of requirements, I assume, for this level of care. Are there any ADA requirements internally and for parking?
I believe this serves as a public accommodation, which would trigger certain accessible requirements, especially for the employees. So I would assume that this facility, as we go through the building plan check requirement, we'll check it for all the accessibility requirements, and whatever is applicable will be required.
And would that be for all rooms or just the additional room conversions?
Well, at this point, we'll be just checking the new conversion part. The rest of the building was previously permitted a year or two ago, so I would expect that that was all checked at that time.
And are there any existing ADA parking or any new proposed with there? I guess there are no new parking spaces proposed. So are there any of the current parking spaces designated accessible?
I would ask the applicant exactly what his parking standards are for accessibility.
Okay. Thank you.
It's my understanding that there are state inspections that go on somewhat routinely, or every year, every 2 years, or something like that.
That's my understanding. The applicant can probably tell you exactly what that protocol is.
Thank you, Warren.
I have a couple questions. I think earlier you said that a residency of 15 people is the cutoff point?
For patients.
Oh, just patients, not doesn't include the owners.
The owners would be in addition to the 15 patients.
So that's 17. Does that put them over the 15 limit?
No.
Okay.
The limit is the clients that basically receive care.
Okay, fine. The other question would be for the fire chief. I know a lot of our care facilities in town call the fire department on a regular basis for assistance, lift assistance. Does this facility, do you have any knowledge of a record of calls to this facility? If there would be, you think there might be a greater impact on the services required from the fire department?
Good evening. Yes, we do respond to this facility. I would assume that there would be an increase, and I don't know what those records are as to how many calls per year that we respond to this facility.
Okay, thank you.
It would take research.
Okay. So you possibly could anticipate an increase in calls if they increase the occupancy by a third?
I would assume so.
Fine, thank you. Okay, if there's no other questions from the council for the staff, I'll open it up for a public comment period. And I think if the applicant would like to come up first and make a statement and
answer any of the questions.
Good evening.
You have to push the little button with the green light. Come on. No, right at the base of the microphone.
Oh, set push. Okay, there. Sorry. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Milan Vrajic, and I live at 9525 Galena Court. And my wife and I do own this home and care facility for the elderly. To address some of the questions that you may have that were brought up, as far as the emergency calls, we probably don't get as many as some of the other facilities because our staff to clients ratio is quite higher. There's actually, we employ 12 employees on a 10 resident. That's not including my wife and I. So there is always ample supervision, and we have a pretty good reputation for not having so many falls. I'm not saying that no one has ever fallen in our facility, but they were always supervised when they fell, which means there was a very minor. We have over the 12 years or so, only two more serious calls that resulted in a hospitalization, but the rest of them all, usually when the emergency services are summoned, they are usually for things where the patient or the resident is not responding, and they have some medical issue that needed attention, and we're required to call 911 for that reason. But those are far and few in between. As far as the ample parking is available, as you can see over there, even next to the concrete area, especially in the summertime, you can actually park a lot of vehicles there. We sponsor the Alzheimer's organization once a year retreat, and we had over 60 people, and they parked in the back and the front. None of them ever had to park on a street. So it's I consider it not even being an issue, really, because there is a really large, wide driveway, and I think that the fire department, when they come with their fire trucks and the vehicles, have no issue in being able to turn around and do that. We always, by the way, keep the front driveway, the big, wide driveway in the front of the house, open as much as possible for that reason in case there is an emergency. Occasionally, park the cars that you see parked there, we never parked our cars there. They're parked in the back. But usually, if you see a car there, it's probably because either somebody's visiting or a nurse or a doctor. With the increase, with five more residents, the nurses and doctors, usually when they come to see, they see multiple residents, especially the doctor. So we do not have to transport them to clinics and things like that. It's very convenient for us and for the resident for that reason, that we have doctors, nurses, physical therapists that come from time to time. Residents are with Alzheimer's and dementia, so therefore, and somewhat not able to walk that well and all that. So they're never outside unsupervised. When they do go out for walks, whether we roll them in a wheelchair or they, actually most of them are wheelchair or walkers, they're always supervised 100% every time, whether it be in the back or in the front. They spend most of their time outdoors in the back, not so much in the front. So they're not even visible to the neighbors for that reason. We have a quite nice backyard in the summer. It's very pleasant there, and they enjoy sitting there under umbrellas and having their little Hawaiian luau parties and things like that we provide for them. So as far as that goes, I have a hard time understanding why our two neighbors in particular, John Ellis and Mr. Stone, who has recently purchased a property, doesn't know us that well. We're actually the oldest neighbors in the neighborhood. There are six properties, and we are the original ones, with exception of Mr. Savis, who is next door to us. He moved shortly after we moved. The properties, the four properties across the street, are all resold at least once and up to four times, which is the case to Mr. Stone's property. Currently, that property is rented with option to buy. Mr. Stone, when he purchased this a couple years ago, apparently never intended to live there, or maybe he did and changed his mind, but the fact remains that the property was vacant for a long time and deteriorated quite a bit. I helped him actually at no charge to mow his lawn with my tractor and all the weeds in the back and everything. And today I had an opportunity to speak with the renter who has option to buy. And his name is Nick. I didn't catch his last name, but he assured me that he had no issues. He came to talk to me about this issue. He said Mr. Stone has contacted him. He's concerned, I guess, excuse me, I guess he's concerned mostly that he will not be able to sell this property. Apparently, he's purchased the property when the property was still before all this economical collapse at higher value, and now he's concerned that he won't be able to sell that property. In fact, my son was interested in purchasing it, but he wanted to sell it after 2 years for $10,000 more than he has purchased. And my son said, you think that you really believe that your property is valued more now than it was 2 years ago? And he said, yes. Yeah. So we kind of backed away from it. So I think that Mr. Stone's concern is that his property would not sell. And he's blaming our facility as a possible reason for that. Although on the outside, it does not look like anything different than other neighbors. In fact, it probably looks a lot better because it's better landscaped than any other, with exception of Mr. Aceves next door, who also has a very nicely landscaped yard. But people across the street, Nick, that I mentioned, said that I think this was blown all out of proportion. These are his words. And he said, I don't think I need to go tonight. I have no objection to this. We are buying this properly. We're interested. We appreciate Mr. Stone letting us, you know, giving us terms and conditions, whatever the deal they made. And he said, we're going to go through with it. We have no problem. We have never seen anything across the street in your property that will bring us any concern. And so I said, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And it was very pleasant, and he offered, even said, if you ever need to park, you're welcome to park on my property. I said, I don't think that would be necessary. I said, but I appreciate that, too. And we offer each other's help if needed. So he said, I wanted to be a good neighbor, and I said, well, that's what I've been doing all this time. In fact, I am the good neighbor. I worked on every property out of all six properties, of course, including mine. But I worked on each of these properties, even mowing or plowing or disking, as a favor to these neighbors. And to my surprise, in our two previous expansions, they actually praised this. We always, even Mr. Stone purchased the property, my wife approached him first and said, you know, we have an elderly facility across the street. Do you have any issues with that? He said, oh, my, that's very nice, you know. And until this came up, the neighbor surfaced started complaining. But it's mostly him and Mr. Ellis. I don't even know if he's here tonight. But the way he characterized us in the letter, he even called me greedy. Didn't appreciate that. And he thinks that I do this out of greed, and it's not so. He's taken his calculator. He calculated how much money I make based upon that I charge $6,000 a month, and I don't know where he got that idea. We do have a resident of $6,000 a month, but the prices go from four, sometimes less. If people can't afford it, we accepted less than that at times, and we call that our charity beds that we fill. So it isn't so. His numbers do look good, and I wish that was true, but it isn't so. And the only other thing is that Mr. Ellis is claiming that the quality, both him and Mr. Stone are claiming that the quality of life is somehow diminished. And I want them to tell me in which way that is so. They wouldn't even know that we have a facility across the street unless we've told them, because it's really not visible from the outside. There is no traffic. There is no extra vehicles. They are different than any other home around. In fact, excuse me, Nick, the young man that has purchased in the home across the street, currently they have seven cars in front of their home. And he even told me, he says, I have more cars in traffic than you guys do. I said, well, that's probably true, because he's got a couple of families living with them, I guess, temporarily. So But it's not an issue, never bothered me. In fact, Alano Street that goes along in the back, that has all these homes in the back, we never actually see a traffic. You see a car once in a while for all these homes. So I don't know what this traffic issue is brought up. Really is not non-existent. Yes, it will probably increase a little bit. So instead of having three cars in front of on our parking, we may have four cars. But mind you that we have two-day shifts, two employees each, and the night shift is only one employee. So it's really actually five employees, and then additional employees that's going to be during the day. So there will be actually, at the most, three to four cars parked in the front at any given time, which can be all accomplished off the front. We keep the front open for emergency visitors and whoever. And all the employee parking is parked on the side.
I think we'll bring it back to the City Council, and we'll ask you for some questions. If they have any questions, we'll open it up for public comment.
Thank you very much.
And if there's any other questions, you'll have the opportunity to come back up. Do you want to come back to the podium? I think Councilman Clay, maybe some of the other council members may have some questions for you.
Sure.
How do you pronounce your first name?
Milan, M-I-L-A-N.
M-I-L-A-N.
Like a city.
Oh, I see. You were one of the original houses that was built there, is that
yes.
right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And my question is, in regards to Homeowners Association, Homeowners Meetings, and CCNRs, has there ever been a homeowners meeting that you know of?
No. When we built this house, the gentleman across the street by the name David Dahl was a contractor. Mm-hmm. This was a New Dahl Construction, a company from Arroyo Grande, who actually built these homes, some of them, mm-hmm. Mine and his, actually. They're almost identical floor plans, by the way. So when we purchased the home, he said, you know, there are going to be CCNRs formed here. My understanding was that the neighborhood, I actually never seen a document until I received it from the city, these CCNRs. I had no idea what this was about. I remember him saying that the neighborhood needs to form this homeowners association, and maybe someday we'll build a gate and made it like a little gated community and all that. But two, 3 years later, he moved out, and that thing just died away. I mean, it was never, ever brought up by anybody. So we never actually formed any of this.
There never was an official meeting that you know of?
No, not okay, even thanks. Once.
And then the handicapped access was brought up?
No.
The handicap access to the facility. I mean, I drove out there. It's flat.
Right. And you can access it with wheelchair easily, and all inside everything is mm-hmm. all one level, and it's very accessible yeah. because most of our clients are in wheelchairs and right. or walkers. So
I see.
And the fire marshal Peterson is well aware of the layout, yeah. and he too was very praising us for the job that we're doing and how well. In his words, he said that we actually went overboard on some of the things that we provide and that we do, and so we comply with all the with alarms and everything else.
And then, in regards to the state, are you inspected by the state occasionally? And have you ever had any violations other than something minor?
No. There were some minor things first when we started. In fact, they regard us as a model facility. When the facility opened around the corner on Llano, there's another facility, I think it's called Touch Above. Mm-hmm. They've told them to come over and speak to my wife, and he says, this is how I want you to run your place, just like the Paradise Valley.
Right, and you have a second facility also?
Actually, my son owns that.
I see.
He's
I
here
see.
Right. as well, okay. by the lake.
Right, and then is there a need? I mean, are you turning people away? Is there a need for the additional
funds? There's definitely a need. There are people here. I think they're going to speak in that. I will not go too much into it, but yes, there is a need.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Sir, I was wondering if someone came out to visit and they had never been there before, would they find the parking spots are marked where they should park so they don't park on the street?
No, they will not park on the street because the front will be open. There's a big, like I said, area in the front that's always available. We never had issues with that.
And do you generally get a lot of visitors or other service people, let's say therapists or ministers, so forth?
No, not really. We really don't have any ministers that I can recall in all these years. Occasionally, we have a physical therapy is when that's ordered, but that's rare too. That's usually as a sign of some condition that's happening and that's not ongoing. Excuse me. So it really isn't an issue.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Well, you do have a good reputation in the community. I've seen you involved in this area and have heard some good things. And I think you have clarified most of my questions. I am, like Councilwoman Fonzie, just concerned about the marking and as additional activities might occur. And is there any designated emergency parking, no parking areas where it's clear that you have access for ambulance or emergency vehicle?
Again, and I just want to address this. The reason we don't have anything marked up, well, number one, we were never asked to. There was never really a need. Never an issue became as an issue. But one of the reasons I don't put a sign in front also is out of respect for my neighbors. I don't want it to look like an institution. I don't want it to look like business. We want to preserve that look as a resident, as a private resident, which that's what it is.
Thank you. That answers my question on that. And it does appear that there's a lot of access area at the front of the house, and it's not been a problem to date.
No.
And as far as losing some of the common area inside to convert to some bedrooms, it sounds like there's not a lot of need for physical therapists or other folks to have room to work.
Yeah, they can work in their bedrooms. We do have a plenty of common area. In addition, the addition is going to have its own common area where residents can congregate, watch TV, or do activities. But in the main part of the house, what we call the main part of the house, we do have two living rooms. You know, one is the TV room and activity room, and the other one is more like a formal living room. When the visitors come, then they can take, you know, and have some privacy in that area there, which is mostly reserved who wants the quiet time to read or, like I said, when the visitors come. And that, again, never been an issue before with that.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Thank you.
Yeah, so just a point of clarification, you had mentioned that there was 12 people or 12 employees when you first had mentioned about the fire department or there not being emergency mm-hmm. response.
Yes.
And Warren had mentioned about there being possibly nine. Exactly how many, what is the number when it comes to the traffic and people coming back and forth? Has there been any complaints up till now prior
no.
to this?
Never from the neighbors, never from anyone, really.
And so you had this this retreat once a year for the Alzheimer's?
Yes.
And was there any complaints, any issues with that?
We have a representative from Alzheimer's organization here as well, and maybe she can address that. But no, there has not been.
Right. Thank you.
Because it was well organized. Traffic has been directed. And there's actually a person there telling people where to park and also directing them to drive in the back and parked in the back. So we have a lot of cars that are parked actually in the back of the property as well in the front area there adjacent to that little pad there shown with three cars.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. Okay. Yeah. Milan, I appreciate your compassion, obvious compassion for the elderly. My experience, my wife's mother was in the Vineyard Convalescent Home for 5 years, and fortunately she maintained her mental faculties very well. But what I saw was that the folks that had severe dementia or Alzheimer's seldom, if ever, got a visit. Is that true in your facility?
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Could you explain how your food service operation goes? You're going to have 15 people to feed and, I suppose,
yes.
three meals a day, and you're going to have three employees there. Does that cut down on the direct supervision that you're going to have on the 15 people if one or two people have to be in the kitchen for a good period of the day?
Usually our kitchen duties are performed by a night person, night shift, because there's not much for them to do, and they just happen to like to cook, too, which is a plus. I forgot to mention one thing, that Our facility employs good quality employees that have been with us a long time, and we pay them probably $4 to $5 above what everybody else does in the industry. So we do have a good employees. The food is prepared, and some of it is, of course, the things that are fresh, they're served. The things that are cooked are done during the night and they're ready. Even the breakfast is ready just before the 6 o'clock person comes. The night shift works from 10 to 6. So all that is done. They have time because they do, most of the laundry is done during the day. If they sometimes have laundry to do, they'll do it. Basically what they're doing, they're super. And that's why the difference is that we want to prevent those falls and those, you know, life-threatening injuries, because for elderly, when they fall and break a hip, can really end their life. So we're very concerned with that.
Okay. One more question.
Yes.
One other thing, in regards to your employees, in regards to background checks and training, how does that go?
We have that's one tough thing about this business. We have to have a Department of Justice and FBI fingerprint clearances done as far as background check. They are constantly monitored. If any new crimes committed, we're notified right away, and the employee is then dismissed or, you know, no longer working there. We have a required training that we do. We do a medication training, which is required by the state of California. This is part of this state of California thing that we really haven't talked about much that was mentioned earlier. The residential home facilities for the elderly out of Santa Barbara is who our licensing oversees us. And we do have a required training, minimum 10-hour and 8-hour in dementia and Alzheimer's, plus additional 6 hours of medication training. We are medication trained, both my wife and I, meaning train the trainer, meaning we're authorized to train it. Before, we have nurses or doctors that would do that, but now we can do that. So that's basically my job consistently, to train in medication. And then they have, we have recently, as about, about 6 months ago, converted everything to electronic. Everything is computerized. So at any given time, we can, even in this meeting, we can, if I was to look at my laptop or my tablet pad, I can see if medication is given to a certain resident, what the notes are being inputted. Everything is done on a computer. And we're probably one of the first leading facilities that are implemented that, thanks to my son, to his credit. So we're all 100% electronic. And so that gives us a better tool. It's a better tool for supervision and detecting problems and trying to troubleshoot the areas if there is an issue there.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Fine. Thank you very much. We'll open it up.
Directly across the street from me at the north end of the cul-de-sac are working. But I'm retired, so I go by that home probably more than anybody. If I'm not going to the store for one thing for the wife, it's something else. Anyway, I'm constantly driving by that house. And I can count on one hand probably the number of times I've met another car coming up that cul-de-sac as I'm driving out. There just isn't that much traffic there. Most cars, if I drove by there on an average day, there's probably no more than two cars there in the front on an average. So I just wanted to make that issue of traffic, it's no problem. It has no problem with my wife and I. And as far as that home is concerned, if the rest of the people in the cul-de-sac could keep up their home like they do, it would be a showplace, the whole cul-de-sac. But I can say that there's a couple of homes in our cul-de-sac. I wish they would take notice of the way he keeps his place. But anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There. My name is Marsha Walters, and I'm here on behalf of the Paradise Valley Care
to address, somebody asked a question about the need for the residential care. So I'd like to read the letter that I wrote. I've been a registered nurse since 1981. I'm currently employed as a private duty nurse to the resident of Paradise Valley Care Facility in Atascadero. In my career as a registered nurse, I've cared for hundreds of patients and families during their time of illness, and I feel qualified to state that the care that is given to the residents is of the finest quality I've ever seen. The residents are happy, safe, and truly believe they're in a loving home. Everyone who has been lucky enough to have their parents reach old age experience the pain of watching their parents decline in health. As their living situations become altered, families must find a place for their loved ones that promotes health, safety, and well-being. We want for them what we want for ourselves someday. The Congress of California Seniors states that the U.S. Census Bureau projects the population of people 65 or older is expected to double by 2030. Locally and nationally. Our local agencies on aging cannot adequately plan for the needs of this growing population of seniors and aging baby boomers. Many will remain the centers and other state programs are working to try to match the most vulnerable patients with remaining services, but many are not likely to be served and will end up in nursing homes with much higher costs. The Seniors Bill of Rights states that our seniors have a right to live with dignity, meaning making important decisions with family members, not bureaucrats, and receiving appropriate long-term care. As a community, we need to build a network of support from family, friends, and medical professionals, and from our own city hall. We need to encourage more beautiful facilities like Paradise Valley Care to be operating and available for our seniors and ourselves as we advance in age. The property itself is a vision and impeccably maintained, making it eligible for any garden tour. The traffic that I have witnessed is no more than any other home with a large extended family. The Vrajic family has many children and grandchildren that use the swimming pool in the summer and fills the air with laughter that the residents enjoy. I sincerely urge the City Hall administration to support and be proud to have Paradise Valley Care in their community. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak?
My name is Sharon Malloy, and I've worked for Paradise Valley Care for 13 years, ever since they began caring for the elderly. After caring for Mr. Ryach's parents until they passed away, the family realized that there were many elderly who did not have family who could or wanted to care for them. They opened their home, their hearts, and their family to those needing a loving environment provided at Paradise Valley Care. They became part of their family, and they are loved. The Ryaches provide a beautiful, clean, happy home for their residents, and the Ryaches yards are the loveliest in the neighborhood. To provide a home for a few more elderly people will have little impact upon the neighbors, as only occasionally is someone in a wheelchair or a walker taken for a short walk down the street, and traffic from occasional visitors is minimal. In the golden years of your life, wouldn't you want to live in a beautiful setting surrounded by caring people instead of being warehoused in an institutional commercial setting? Do not the elderly have the right and deserve the dignity to live in such a
life? We need Paradise Valley Care in this community. Like I said, I work for the Alzheimer's Association. We've got over 6,000 families dealing with Alzheimer's in our county, and that doesn't even include those that have other forms of dementia. Yes, we do. I wish there were more neighborhoods that would embrace a home such as Paradise Valley Care. As long as it's conforming to the laws and the rules of the community, which has been signified that it does. We need Paradise Valley Care. There are not enough places in our community for placement for those who are dealing with Alzheimer's. It's not just being elderly. Alzheimer's is a whole different story, as Ruth and Milan can attest. And not all facilities want to deal with those that have Alzheimer's disease. So we're very fortunate in this community. I think it puts Atascadero at the top of the hill for caring in their community and providing the resources that are needed. I just want to address two things that came up for the appeal concerns, and I think they have been addressed, but one was impact on the neighborhood. Paradise Valley Care wants to attract clients. That's the business reality. And who's going to want to place their parent there if it's not beautiful and if it doesn't feel like home? So it's adding to the community. There's no question about that. And if you haven't seen it, I hope you drive out and see it. It is so beautiful and so easy to park there. You're not tempted to park on the street. You want to drive in to those beautiful trees and those flowers, and they make it very easy to do so. Milan addressed this also. I wish with all my heart people did want to go see the people that were in a home such as Paradise Valley Care. I wish the families could go more often. I wish their friends could drop by. I wish the community would drop by. Alas, that is not so. And so there really isn't very much traffic. You're going to have a lot more traffic with a family than with a facility such as Paradise Valley Care. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jim Shannon, Tuscarora.
Jim, is your mic on?
Oh, it is now? Jim Shannon, Tuscarora. I have no dealing. Right now it's a 10-bed facility. Increase that by five more. Both of my parents are in places south of here. Dad's in San Luis. My mom's down in Lompoc just because of she needs a secured facility. The blessings that five other families could have to have their members closer to them, you know, in this community. So I would say, yeah, pass that. Anyway, I ask for God's blessing on them for what they provide. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Are there any other comments?
My name is Mike Brenler, resident of Atascadero, and I would hope that you give some serious consideration to this endeavor. There is a need, as it's been expressed. I mean, you could see that in virtually all the news articles that are written today. And I think it's been somewhat established that these people have been good role models, not only as the business model, but also as a good neighbor. And I think that what they do is important, and you really should give some serious consideration to this and this worthy endeavor. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Is there any other public comment? If not, the public comment period is now closed, and I'll bring it back to the City Council for comments or a motion.
Can I make a motion?
I think Jerry had a comment first.
Okay, I'd like to go with the staff's recommendation. The council adopt draft resolution A, denying the appeal and upholding the Planning Commission's approval of an amendment to the conditional use permit 2007-0203, increasing the residential care facility at 9525 Galena Court from 10 to 15 clients based on findings and subject to the conditions of approval.
Second.
Any comment? Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzi.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley.
Yes.
Mayor Kelly.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Now we'll move on to the management reports. The first one is the 2012 Community Development Block Grants.
Excuse me. I'd like to excuse myself. One of the items that's under consideration is near my personal residence within a certain perimeter, so I'm required by law to
report. There's discussion regarding this program, which is funded by the federal government, and these grants that the council recommends have to meet one of three criteria, mainly the first one being that the applications show proof that the grants will be a benefit to low and moderate income persons,
will aid in the prevention of the elimination of blight and address urgent needs that pose a serious and immediate threat to the health or welfare of the community. This year's allocation is $170,000 is the estimate. It's very close to what we received last year. The final map, or the final amount, as in each year, will be set in the next month or two by the federal government, and those final awards will be adjusted proportionally, whether that amount, whether the $170,000 goes up or down. So this year, we received, I believe, 13 applications for funding. The total amount of funds applied for by the various organizations was over $500,000. And again, we have $170,000 to divide up. There are some limitations on the amount of money for each of three categories. There's three categories. One is public facilities. This historically has been our barrier removal projects and similar programs. Public services, which is limited to 15%. So this year, the applicants for public service grants are limited to 15%, which would amount to about $25,500 this year. The last category would be economic development and program administration, which is limited to 20%. And that amount would be $34,000. That category, the administration typically pays for the city staff administration of the program. So I know this text up there is small, but you can see it in your staff report. There's public facilities. There's our barrier removal program. The North County Women's Shelter has applied for electrical upgrade funds, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, Loaves and Fishes. Those are all the typical groups that are considered. And under economic development, Mission Community Services has applied for a grant for a women's business program. So with Rochelle's help, what we thought we would do is, after we ask if there's any representatives from these groups that would like to address the council, we could go through with a spreadsheet on the screen and see which grants that each councilman would like to address, if this is the way you'd like to do it, as we've done it in the past. You can each make your recommendations, and then you can sort through and try to get some consensus on the dollar amounts. So with that, Rochelle, if you want to put up that screen, and perhaps this might be a good time to ask if there's any representatives here.
Yes, we'd like to open up to public comment. Anybody that's on the request list, if you want to step up to the podium, and if you need a little more than 3 minutes, I think we'll allow that tonight. Okay. All right.
Okay. Ed, thank you, Mayor Kelly and council members, for this opportunity. My name is Dan Jones, and I'm the president of the North County Adaptive Sports and Recreation Program. We are a nonprofit organization formed to provide year-round supervised adaptive sports and recreational activities for developmentally disabled individuals in northern San Luis Obispo County. Our participants range in age from 15 years of age to 67 years of age. We presently have 55 participants, 17 of which are from Atascadero. The remainder live in Templeton, Paso Robles, and our surrounding areas here in the North County. All of our participants are clients of the Tri-Counties Regional Center, and they are served by one of the following organizations: either Pathpoint, North County Industries, Escuela del Rio, or Options. We are a unique program in the fact that we do not duplicate any other services that are available in the North County. Our sports program is strictly recreational and not competitive. We have recreational events such as dancing, barbecues, and other get-togethers that allow social interaction and that are just plain fun for our participants. Our program is inclusive and not exclusive, which means that we strive to include all participants with all ability levels, such as ride-on. Keeping this no-cost program for our participants is one of our major goals. We partner with Cal Poly, and we have students from Cal Poly that become involved in volunteering and coaching. And in fact, one senior recently used our group as part of her senior project, which dealt with planning and implementing recreational activities for disabled adults. So we reach out to our friends at Cal Poly, and the students have been excellent in providing help, coaching, and we feel that we're giving back a little bit to them, too. We enjoy participating in community events. We recently took part in the Atascadero Colony Day Parade. We also had a float at the Paso Robles Christmas Parade. We've participated and joined in and became part of soccer games, and we go see the Cal Poly women's basketball games with regularity. We also hope to become more visible and participate in the community as our program expands. For the uses of this grant money, of course, all organizations have, would you like me to go on? Okay. All organizations have basic expense needs, and we're just asking for help with some of these basic expenses, such as liability insurance. We need to maintain post office box. We will probably have some legal and accounting expenses in the way of meeting tax forms and different reports we have to give back to the state and to the federal government because of our nonprofit status. And we would like to also thank the Atascadero Colony Park for all of their help that they have given us in getting this program going. We look at this as seed money. We want to become self-sustaining, and we want to be able to use this money to help us get these basic needs so that we can then go out and fundraise and become an active part of the community.
Fine. Thank you. Next.
Susan Warren with North County Connection. And we're here to that I put in for the acquisition. We're trying to get as self-sustainable as we can. We'd just like to be able to get this escrow started on this and get this closed on the property. What we're looking at right now, and I realize that there's not a lot of money there, when we talked about the development and the needs, our first and most immediate need expenses, but you know, we realize these are trying times for everyone, and we're able to get this escrow up and going and really get started with this. You know, we can work. We'd love to work with the city on this. The other thing is we're actually, now that we're getting close to opening an escrow on this property, we will be having our first Friends of North County Connection meeting this week, and we have quite an agenda of items, and one of those, I'm glad to see Barbie's in the audience because I need to ask her about the brick campaign and who's the best company, because now there's a lot of them doing that. But that's one of the things that we want to start to help us continue and sustain and close the escrow. It won't even be to close the escrow, but as a capital campaign, to get the property fully paid for, and so that we can stay sustainable and be and as an important part of this community, as we've heard, for the elderly, and we serve the disenfranchised and those with addictions, and try to get them back into being viable members of the community.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Sue, are you going to open escrow? I mean, how
well,
close are
we
you?
Hope so.
I mean,
it's dependent on funding that we're looking at from the city and from the county.
Are you getting close? So I guess it's
well, I don't know. That's my question out here to the city and the county. Yeah. I don't know how long we're going to be held off. I know we're all just sitting and waiting to hear from the state and what's going on. So.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
I think at one time we had K came up with possibly $100,000 of the in-lieu fees.
Correct.
Has city staff looked into that? Would this qualify for that, or are we still working on that?
We're still working on that, and certainly the redevelopment issue has changed our world with respect to that may be the only housing money left, and so we'll need to bring it back to you to make sure that what your priorities are.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, fine. Thank you, Sue.
Okay.
Is there any other public comment or anyone that would like to get up?
We did serve fewer kids overall in the county as well as in Atascadero. The money stays right here in our community and goes for finding volunteers to mentor children as well as screening them and providing ongoing support so that they stick around and those mentoring relationships have positive impact. And while it's role models for kids, I think the impact is really the important thing. Harris Interactive found that children enrolled in our program as adults, going back long-term studies, are better educated, wealthier, and have stronger relationships with their family and friends. So it's sort of a pay now or pay later sort of scenario, funding youth mentoring. Wondering if there's any questions.
No questions. Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your support.
Is there anyone else?
Good evening. Bernadette Bernardi with the Literacy Council for San Luis Obispo County. I'd like to thank you for your ongoing support, your past support, and we certainly need it to continue as much as possible. We are being totally cut. We are at the top trigger with the state funding, so that's pretty much gone at this point, but we're always hopeful. So we are trying to find alternatives, but we appreciate any funding that the city of Atascadero can provide for us. We do serve at any given month at least 40 people in our learning center right here in Atascadero. And we instruct individuals 16 and older. We teach them how to read and write and sometimes speak English. We do have people that are born right here in Atascadero, sometimes graduated from, I won't say this high school, but certainly high school, that do not read well enough to compete in today's world, as well as individuals who are wanting to make a new life here in the United States. And we have the whole world represented in all of our centers. Unless you have any other questions, I just want to say thank you again.
Any questions? Sure. Fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else? With that, we'll close the public comment and bring it back to staff. I think, Rochelle, are you going to?
I thought we were making a $100,000 commitment, I believe. And I thought it was out of in-lieu funds to get escrow started. And if that's very likely, then I'd be less inclined to take funds out of here. But if that's less likely, then this is a priority, I think, we looked at last time.
Okay, I don't think we really have an answer.
So I kind of hate to leave them hanging.
Right.
Can we get any clarification on, is there a, because we have to be pretty specific. If we don't fund them here, we can't come back later and add them in. And I don't know which is more flexible, this funding or our in-lieu fees, which I thought we had flexibility on. You even going to make me stay within 30?
Shoot. Yes, that's the goal for
okay.
the year.
Okay. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I have some input on that issue.
Thank you.
We have been researching the ability of the city, the legal ability of the city, to use its in-lieu housing fees for the North County Connection. It's my understanding that they do have a separate unit at the facility that is a kind of a self-contained unit, if you will. It's got, I believe, kitchen facilities and a bathroom facility that we might be able to designate as a unit that we could identify as an affordable unit. We're still doing the legal research on that, but we have been requested to review that and provide the appropriate documentation if it's possible to make that happen. In terms of timing for what you would do this evening, I hadn't thought through how you might be able to put all that together, but I can say that I believe that that is certainly a possibility that we're looking into, and based on our research so far, we think that it may very well happen.
Okay, so then that is a possibility, but if we designated funds here out of these community development block grant, it would be a certainty. This is something that would qualify for property acquisition.
I have a question in regards to the same
thing. Maybe if I could, Mrs. Warren, there's two properties associated with North County Connection. The separate.
Just one.
Is there the housing facility in the unit that you work at? Okay.
It's category at the $170,000 total funding. That category would be at about $110,500 would be the available funding.
So, Russ, I have a, is okay?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a little confused here because the North County Women's Shelter is asking for $3,200 and we're giving them $11,000. What's happening?
They've applied for $3,200.
Right. So how did we end up recommending $11,000?
We're not. That I mean, the women's shelter is shown up there as $3,200.
North County Women's Shelter on this sheet I have says $11,000 for 2011.
That was a previous.
I think that was last couple years
okay,
ago.
Okay, this is 12. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm ready for that facility. Who knows?
Councilman Clay, we're doing it a little bit different this year. Right. This year we did not make a staff recommendation. Okay. We're just going to leave it open.
Okay, so.
I think, Rochelle, when we start here, we probably should, the $34,000 administrate, that's, we have to do that, right? So we need to subtract that from the 170 and start working kind of backwards?
It does cost about $34,000 in staff time. And if you don't allocate this CDBG, we still have to dedicate that staff time. So basically, it's a hit to your general fund, which, as you know, has its own issues.
Fine. Thank you. So I think what we'll do, Jerry, if
well, on public facilities, what do we have? What can we spend, Rochelle? How much?
I believe Russ said 110,500. If you subtract out, if you assume that you're going to spend the maximum in public services, which is 25,500, the maximum in administration, which is 34,000, that gets you the 110.
Okay, and public services was how much again?
25,500. So you have 110,450.
Okay. And then the administration, that's 34, and that's going to stay that way, or?
It does cost us $34,000 a year. Yeah. If for some reason it does not cost us that, what we do is we roll it over and reallocate it in the next year to public facilities.
I see. So, 25, holy cow.
So, Mayor, it sounds like there was agreement on the 34,000.
Yes, I believe so.
And I would like to apply $3,200 to the North County Women's Shelter for electrical upgrade and garage door replacement, and $107,300 to North County Connection for the acquisition of the Sober Living Center. On the public services, $2,000 for the youth scholarship activities. For the Tasker Loaves and Fishes would be $10,000. For the El Camino Homeless Organization would be $12,500. And for the Senior Nutrition Program would be $1,000. And then the $3,400 for our administration. It's very important at this time that this economic time we're in, it's very important to me, families, food, housing, shelter is kind of where my mind's going. Also our elderly and children. So we're that's why I made the choices I made.
Does that come to, does that balance out?
That does balance out.
Okay, and Tom?
Yes, well, this is tough because as I thought we were being able to fund the North County Connection with other funds, but I don't want to take a chance that that doesn't work in the future. So
I would rather split that to some degree, but I would support $100,000 as requested for North County Connection, and I want to see the $3,200 for North County Women's Shelter and the remainder of that going to the access ADA improvements in the city.
But perhaps I should interject that, in case my comments previously were not clear on this point, we believe it is very likely that the in-lieu housing fees are going to be available for the North County Connection based on the research that we've done. We are in the process of preparing appropriate legal documents to allow that process to proceed. It just hasn't been completed yet. My understanding was that North County Connection was going to be putting together a package of funds that were going to be in an escrow to assist them with their purchase of this site. Some of those funds coming from the county. I don't know where their other sources of fundings were, so that if they were able to acquire the necessary funds to purchase the property, that the city funds would be made available through the in-lieu housing. And as I had indicated, we've been requested to put the legal documents together that would make that happen.
Read up. It sounds like that might be quicker than the community block grant funds, which has a whole process yet ahead of us.
Well, I would defer to Russ Thompson on this one as to if he knows what the timing is for the funding of the CDBG grants. How long does that take?
Typically, this is a recommendation. It will go to the county Board of Supervisors for adoption. It'll come back in about 30 days. It comes back to this council for any final adjustments. We receive the money in about the middle of the year, typically.
So it'll be more like summertime.
And I think it's more like November.
Is it later?
Okay, yep.
Okay, Rochelle. Yeah.
Mrs. Warren, could you step back up, please? Is there a urgency clause to this? Is there any time restraints that you have with the transaction?
Yes. We've got until the end of April to try to get this escrow opened and taken care of.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
So I'm going to change. Yeah, I'm going to change my recommendation then. That I think we do not try to fund this out of the block grant funds, and we'll keep that on course. That you are working diligently to fund their previous request within the in lieu fees.
I think we hear what you're saying is that you want us to try to get that in lieu fee tied down in the $100,000 for North County
to meet
that escrow issue
to help on this one. So with that. I would leave my recommendation $3,200 for the North County Women's Shelter and the remainder towards ADA items.
And I also would do the same.
Let me ask.
Then, well, let's go ahead and go through our list.
Well, could I ask a question? What's wrong with giving the North County Connection $200,000? I mean, they're not going to buy it. What's the price of that property? $400,000. I mean.
But they got to have it.
Yeah. Do you have a letter of intent or anything of what the sales price is?
Yes, we do.
I have talked with you a little
right.
bit before on this, and
yeah.
I'm a little familiar we
are firm with them now at $399.9.
Yeah, they'll mm-hmm. carry some paper on that, too.
Yes.
They're very cooperative, too.
Yes, very cooperative.
What is the amount of money that you need to...
$205.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that...
With my recommendation, and then I would recommend we apply $55,000 of this category to help... in addition to the $100,000 we are seeking out of other funds. And then you are well on your way.
Yes, we are.
And then the remainder going to ADA. Then let me move on down to the public service section. And this is a tough one. We always wish we had more here, but I would like to see $6,000. Actually, I'm going to revise that down to $4,000 for the youth activity scholarships, $11,000 for loaves and fishes, $8,500 for El Camino, and then $2,000 for the North County Adaptive Sports and Recreation. And what I heard, which kind of led me to want to try to help there, is it sounds like you're looking for some seed money and you really are working towards getting this self-sustaining, and that's the kind of thing we really want to support. And we might even want to find another $500 there if we look at it closer.
Fine, thank you. Jerry?
Well, I'm okay with what Tom said up above there on public facilities. I would throw in another 10 to the North County Connection to make it 65. But
we'll get to that part.
Okay, and then you included the 3,200, right,
yes,
Tom? And the balance going to the City of Atascadero for pedestrian improvements on the public service. I would do $3,500 for the Atascadero Community Service Foundation, $10,000 to Lowe's and Fishes, and $12,000 El Camino Homeless Organization, and that's it.
Okay. I pretty much go along with what you submitted, Tom. I think that's a fair and equitable area.
So how close are we there?
So at the top, 52.3, 3,200, 100,000 for North County Connection. Whoops. Sorry, 55,000 for North County Connection. And then, I'm sorry, I missed what you wanted here.
For the Community Services Foundation?
The balance.
4,000.
I would certainly like to see, my recommendation of 12,000. I think that's what I said, was it not?
What do you think about 50-50 on those two?
You mean
taking Tom's amount of money and splitting it up 50-50?
I think the point I was raising,
Lowe's and Fishes and
Councilman
and Echo, they're both provide food for the homeless and the needy. And well, I think they both do equally good job.
Lowe's and Fishes doesn't provide housing.
Yeah, right. Shelter.
Shelter.
Yeah.
Well, I think one thing I've given into account is we have always supported Lowe's and Fishes and Echo maximally. And I believe we're also looking at doing some in-lieu fees for Echo. $300,000. So don't forget, on top of this, we've committed $100,000 to North County Connection and $300,000 to Echo. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'd kind of like to help some of these other organizations get a start.
Okay, I can buy that. No argument. You said $8,000, right?
$8,500.
Okay.
Okay, we got three.
Brian? And then you said $8,000 for... what did you say for Lowe's and Fishes?
Well, let me go. I think Rochelle has it, but let me go through my list again.
Are you getting mixed up, Tom?
I don't have this mixed up at all. I have mine written down.
I can't read, but...
For Community Services Foundation, I had $4,000.
$4,000, okay.
And then the Lowe's and Fishes, $11,000.
All right.
The Echo, $8,500, and then some seed money for North County Adaptive Sports and Recreation of $2,000.
Yeah.
I'd kind of like to even give them another $500.
Well, here's my theory. I think we should spend our money for Atascadero.
Absolutely.
And that's for North County.
I agree.
It's for the North County. It's not just Atascadero.
That's why I was looking at the seniors. There's over 200 seniors that are fed by that organization. That's a lot of our population here.
But the senior nutrition program of San Luis County, both are countywide.
Yeah,
I think we are trying to.
We
got to
stick our money in our community because other communities are going to do the same thing.
Right.
So,
Brian, do you have any comment on?
I do. I'm actually, after the conversation about the numbers and the timing and all that, I would also like to change my upper numbers to the same as Tom and Bob for the 55,000. For North County Connection, 32. I still want to do Echo at full amount, even though we are giving them money there. They've got a big undertaking with this project coming up, even with the 300,000.
Tom, what do you think about flipping Lowe's and Fishes and Echo?
that would be fine.
Would that be fine? Would that work out for you, well, Jerry? Go.
The only problem we have was anything that doesn't cover just our community.
No.
And on our North County Adaptive Sports Recreation, isn't that county-wise or North County period? It's Paso, Templeton, and so on. See, that's where.
But did you say you're going to kind of headquarter out of the recreation center here in town?
So yes, the recreation center has actually helped us get started. When we started this program just a little year and a half ago, they offered us some time that was normally staffed at no cost, and so we started off with that. But we would like to get into a situation to where we're paying for that time and we're carrying our own weight. And so we needed the seed money to get started because we actually need money to get liability insurance and things such as this so that we can go out and actually fundraise. We do have a liability when we're out there doing those types of things.
I think that's a real important program, even if it does go outside of the city
and
limits.
One thing,
to
we have asked also the community of Paso Robles for an additional $2,500 to share this, because if you look at our participants, we have about 17 known Atascadero residents, but in the surrounding area, we have more Atascadero residents as well, or people that come to Atascadero.
That'd be fine.
On the other hand, the Atascadero Community Service Foundation, they serve its only kids in our community that can't afford to pay for their sports events. So, you know, there's where I know that you're doing the right thing, sir. Don't get me wrong. It's just that, there's no guarantee you're going to get the $2,500 from Paso either. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm not going to count on that. What my thought was, Councilman Clay, is the key word that was said was seed money.
Hey,
and
don't talk any further. I'm with you, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to go
good.
For
I'll
it.
I'll quit. Right. If you're done, if you agree with me, I won't argue anymore.
Right. Great. So I think Jerry agrees. I agree. Tom agrees. Brian? I think you almost have to.
Well, I almost have to.
Well, you don't have to.
No. So, because you guys have $8,500 for ECHO, and you've got $2,000 for the. I mean, the adaptive. Like I said, the kids are very important to me.
Right.
Sorry, you want $11,000 for Atascadero Loaves and Fishes?
Yes, $4,000 for the community Atascadero Community Service Foundation.
That would be
$8,500 for.
Just copy Tom's column.
Okay. So that does add up to $25,500.
Okay.
$4,000 for the Community Services Foundation, $11,000 for Loaves and Fishes, $8,500 for ECHO, and $2,000 for North County Adaptive Sports and Recreation.
Okay. Are we okay on all three areas now?
You're okay on all three areas.
Okay. Make a motion, Tom.
I move we forward the community block grant application recommendations to the county as specified.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Third. Roll call. Vote, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Kelly?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
At this time, I think we'll take a 5-minute break and we'll let Councilmember Alfonsi come back. And
we'll... Best decision you made all night.
That's right. The City Council will go back into session, and we'll go to item number 2 on the management report. And City Manager McKinney, is that one that you want to handle?
Yes, I lost my attorney. this is a report by our legal counsel.
Well, turn his clock off until he gets back.
We'll save a little funds there. The first order of business for the redevelopment, the turn down or wind down of redevelopment, is this action to determine if whether or not the city would like to be the successor organization for the redevelopment agency. There's really two parts, the non-housing and the housing. It appears that the attorney is back, but also that the majority of cities and the really the legal advice around the state is that we should take an action to affirmative action to say that we wanted to be the successor agency, even though that there may be a less requirement in the law. Should I stop and you'll...
Yeah, I think a successor agency for non-housing purposes to the redevelopment agency and a successor agency to the redevelopment agency for housing purposes. As we indicated in the staff report, because of the decision by the Supreme Court upholding ABX 126, which is the Dissolution Act, but not upholding ABX 127, which would have allowed us to opt in, there is going to be certain actions that are going to be taken with respect to the dissolution of the redevelopment agency unless the state legislature should adopt additional legislation, but that hasn't happened yet, so we have to proceed on the assumption that it's not going to happen. If it does happen, then we can come back and make appropriate modifications. Now, if the city does serve in the role of the successor agency, resolution is before you that would allow that to happen. If the city elects not to serve as the successor agency, then that role is going to fall into the hands of the first local agency that elects to become the successor agency once they submit a resolution to that effect. And if there is no local agency that wants to be the successor in interest, successor agency, then the governor is going to appoint three residents of the county to serve as the successor agency. So it would be in the best interest and is our recommendation that the city do adopt the proposed resolution so that the city does become the successor in interest to the redevelopment agency for non-housing purposes. Now, with respect to housing purposes, The state law does allow for the city to elect to become the successor housing agency and to retain the housing assets and the affordable housing functions of the former redevelopment agency. Once again, if you do not make that choice, then the successor housing agency would be your local housing authority if there is one, and if not, it would become HCD. Let me mention that on the first point with respect to the successor agency for the non-housing, the state law actually says that by default the city would become the successor agency, but it's our recommendation and it seems to be a pretty consensus recommendation throughout the state, and what most cities are doing is not rely upon that default provision, but instead to take the affirmative action, which is the one that's before you tonight, which is to say that provisions on page 107, there's two, therefore, provisions. The first one is the connection with becoming the successor for non-housing. And the second one, which is at the bottom of the page there, the one that begins in accordance with Health and Safety Code Section 34170, that's for the housing. Excuse me. At the end of that sentence, I am recommending that we add this language, that the city expressly reserves the right to rescind this election, comma, I period, E period, to retain the housing assets and functions previously performed by the agency, comma, at any time in the future with and without cause. So that would then allow, if for some reason in the future the city did not want to continue to serve as a successor agency for housing purposes, that we would leave that as an option available to you in the future. Obviously, there's a little bit of pressure here because if the council doesn't make this decision tonight, then that window of opportunity will have passed and you wouldn't be able to become the successor for housing purposes, because this resolution, if passed by the council tonight, has to be submitted to the county auditor by this Friday. So there wouldn't be another council meeting between now and then for you to think about this further. But it is a fairly, I don't want to say universal, but it is becoming very common for cities to take the actions that I'm recommending to you tonight, namely to name yourselves as a successor agency. You have more control under those circumstances, and it doesn't fall into the hands of third parties. Now, there is one other comment I wanted to make. There was a question that was raised about the AB 26 and the restoration of the City Hall project. And on that point, let me say this, that you should keep in mind that there are some uncertainties with regard to the application of AB 1X26 to specific projects. However, we can say that it appears at this time that the City Hall restoration project is not at risk, and that the restoration work should be able to be completed as planned. So that ends my staff report. I'm certainly prepared to respond to questions if you have any.
Fine. Do any council members have any questions? Jerry?
In regards to these two agencies, do we need two different people, or can one person serve?
The successor agency will, in fact,
like to comment on this. Please step forward and state your name.
I'm Susan Warren, and from Atascadero. And I just wanted to, I read Councilman Fonzie's letter in our article in the paper about contacting our assemblyman and senator and the governor about the RDA program. And I just wanted to read you the letter and how RDA has affected us in our organization. And dear Governor Brown, North County Connection, a nonprofit 501c3, is a recovery resource center located in Slo County in the city of Atascadero. This letter is to ask you to reconsider abolishing the redevelopment agencies in California. We feel the good they can do for the community far outweighs the transgressions of a few. Could this not be resolved by some restructuring, evaluating, or oversight to eliminate the abuses rather than eliminate the opportunities provided by the RDA to uplift our community, not only visually but also physically and emotionally for our residents? As a free anonymous drop-in center in the community of Atascadero for over 20 years, we have seen the benefits of the redevelopment agency at work for the members of the community who use our center. We provide and post job applications at our center, and quite a number of our clean and sober patrons have re-entered the workforce through many of the service sector jobs downtown. Our parents, grandparents, and young adults especially like the Winter Wonderland and other family events sponsored by the Main Street Association. The biggest loser we perceive is the low-income housing development money that is by far the biggest need in Slo County. Healthcare reform is bringing mental health and substance abuse issues to parity with all other chronic diseases. Primary care physicians and ER doctors will soon be required to screen, do a brief intervention, and refer people to treatment, one of the most critical aspects for stabilizing someone in their first year of recovery is a sober living environment. Our low-income county residents have to find resources outside the county where there's wait lists, or they can get them in county jail. This is a critical need in our county, which is only going to get worse. The low-income housing RDA money provides opportunities for our city to create these needed resources. Thank you for your time in thinking about reconsidering the abolishment of the RDA funds.
Thank you. Thank you.
An agency has been and is now to this city, and its redevelopment and the establishment of a revitalized downtown in particular. So it certainly is a big setback to have this court decision lead to the dissolution of the RDA, but still it can't be given up just yet. I mean, there may be some way to salvage some or all of the redevelopment agency operations, or maybe even the agency itself. Who knows? Maybe the legislature. Somebody might step in here to help in the future. And taking the action of making the city the successor, proactively taking the action of making the city the successor to the RDA, is something that at least positions the city best to capitalize on any developments, positive developments that may occur. Even though by default it could happen that way, why depend on default? It seems that if nothing else, it shows the council's commitment to the RDA and the projects that it's produced and its activities in the past and the present. It shows the council's belief in those things to proactively move in this way and say that the city is stepping into the shoes of the RDA insofar as it can. So I certainly encourage you to follow the staff's recommendations on this and to go beyond that in any way possible to explore every conceivable way to salvage as much of the RDA's endeavors as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good evening, Council. My name is Mike Brandler. I'm a resident of Atascadero and a former member of the Council. In the past several weeks since the dissolution of the community redevelopment agencies, you know, I've heard a lot of complaints from city officials throughout the state, including certain officials here. My take is that, in reality, the officials only have themselves to blame, and I support Governor Brown for reeling in the RDAs. In August, I spoke to you about themselves about abuse in the RDA system. I would encourage them to view a website. It's www.fulldisclosure.net, and view a video entitled "Billions in Fraud and Waste, Who Will Stop It?" Now, as I mentioned previously, I educated myself on RDA law, and I discovered problems with matters that we voted on in the past. I suggested that you and the council could contact me if you were interested. Unfortunately, none of you did. Many of the activities that you authorized appear in direct conflict with RDA law, specifically Section 3345, Subsection A, Subsection 3. And is that slide available, Marcia, the one that I... It's called the Enforcement Obligation Payment Schedule.
It's two Word documents. Look at the folder at the bottom on the left. No, it's, I had opened it. It's a flash drive. It's already open at the bottom.
Thank you. That slide depicts the project numbers. This is from the city's own enforcement obligation payment schedule as related to the RDA. The project numbers are identified, project name. I redacted the vendor information, and then there's a description and the some of the RDA expenditures that were made. And these project number 18, for instance, is a contract for emptying downtown trash cans. 19 is contract for maintenance of the downtown landscape and hardscape areas. Same thing for project number 20. And then cleaning, project number 21 is cleaning of sunken gardens walkways. And it approximates $19,000-$20,000. Could you go to the next slide? It's entitled.
Oh, she turned the timer off.
That's the one. Thank you. This is the law. This is the law. Section 3345, subsection A, subsection is the unethical participation in and voting on the pedestrian bridge by Councilmember O'Malley. You know, over, I think it was over $1 million.
I think your time's up, Mr. Brendler.
I think you cut me off.
There no, was, we had your clock turned off for quite a while, then we reactivated it. Actually,
well, I have one paragraph.
Actually, we've addressed these items before in the past, and your time's up.
Abuse it and lose it.
Is there any further public comment?
Jim Shiana, Tascadero. Boy, 110% disagree with a previous speaker. For him to quote Governor Brown about the misuse of funds as a state governor and as the Democrat Party that runs this state, give me a break. Anyway, it's devastating to Atascadero. The decision that was made. You know, it comes down to nothing more than stealing tax dollars that benefit this community and a lot of good things that we've done with it. And I'm really disappointed to see or not see. We go back to December 13th, the last meeting we had here, all kinds of people coming up here speaking about their tax dollars being taken and abused or whatever, which hasn't even happened yet when we're talking about the interchange. And I believe in the note that I wrote down that the city manager said that on average we collect about $3 million a year on redevelopment funds. And I just, as a parameter to look at, let's go back to the opposed Walmart or Save Atascadero group, go back 6 years that they've been here and complaining and causing trouble. That's, you know, six times three, that's $18 million. Why aren't they up here talking about tax dollars being stolen from us? And it's just, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And, you know, whatever you guys need to do tonight to keep what money we do have here, you know, what's next? What are they going to come after next? They've pretty much taken everything. The problem is not us, not the redevelopment agencies. The problem is the incompetence of the leadership in this state and the party that's ran this state for many years. So for the previous speaker to get up here and to speak that way just speaks, you know, volumes of, you know, I mean, what I think the city attorney has also spoke before to some of the issues he's brought up that were he was incorrect, and he continues to bring them up. So just move forward and do what you have to do tonight to keep what funds we do have and keep improving the things of the city as we can with these.
You want to look at there's corruption and thievery, so the RDA shouldn't be punished for all these other people's mistakes or whatever it is they want to call them. But I just wanted to state that I'm very proud to be part of Atascadero's community, business community, and I'm going to join together with our current Main Street board and we're going to do all we can do with or without the RDA money. So we're just going to work together, and that's what it's going to take. Thank you.
Thank you for your support. Is there any other public comments? If not, we'll close the public comment period and bring it back to the city council for any comments, questions, or a motion.
Well, Councilman Clay, I'll make a motion.
Okay, hurry up.
Okay. I move we adopt staff's recommendation.
I did have a comment
or a
question, perhaps, if that would be okay?
Sure.
Okay, when we go to the non-housing and the housing, if it were to not go to the city as the successor agency, would we see that money possibly go up to a board that would decide where our housing, affordable housing, goes throughout the county? Let's say a county agency that would say low-cost housing project over here and over here and over here, and we'd lose that local control feature as well as the money?
The default, if the city doesn't elect to become the successor housing agency, would be that the housing functions would be taken over by the local housing authority. So you would not have that control.
Very good. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to clarify that I think that if we can retain local control, we know what is best as a city, where to put these things and how to use that money. I hate to see this go to Sacramento, to be sucked into a black hole. We will never see this money used for our city needs. So if we can retain it locally, I'm most definitely in favor of that.
I think, Brian, did you have a comment?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jerry.
Just a way to, as we learn more and more about this redevelopment decision, you will keep the public informed.
Absolutely, Councilmember Clay. Thank you for asking. One of the next steps, which we anticipate you'll see at your next council meeting, because we're still trying to craft in a community center in Sutton Gardens now for years, and so there are levels of maintenance in the downtown, trash pickup and tree trimming, lighting that we don't do anywhere else in town, and we pay for those. Those projects were submitted to the controller's office. They didn't question any of those projects. They continue to be on the EPOS statement of our programs. Conversely, one of the things that we're really trying to get across, and I appreciate Main Street meeting this morning and discussing it and their contribution to this, but as we eliminate, or as the state has now eliminated some of those services, and we're not picking up trash downtown, and we're not doing the planters downtown, and there is some light issues downtown, we will be promoting blight. And the whole issue of this thing was to eliminate blight and cause private reinvestment so that the downtown reinvested in itself. And I think you can all attest, and certainly in the life of our 10 years worth of Main Street here, we've seen a lot of blight go away in terms of the downtown and the impact of redevelopment's really come together. So I agree, Councilmember Clay, that that's an important definition there.
Thank you.
Okay, if there's no other comment or questions, I think I think he wants to resubmit it.
Well, I think we should. I'll go ahead and read the recommendation because it does have two parts. So I move we council adopt the draft resolution, one, determining the City of Atascadero will serve as the successor agency to the Atascadero Redevelopment Agency, and two, electing that the City of Atascadero retain the housing assets and functions previously held and performed by the agency.
And you would add the nomenclature that the city attorney had?
The verbiage that the city attorney,
I'll second
that, yeah.
Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley.
Yes.
Mayor Kelly.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
And now we'll move on to council announcements and reports. Do any council members have any reports? Jerry?
Well, just it's amazing how good our restaurants are getting in Atascadero. I mean, it's just amazing. Kobe Jacks is just going crazy. We have the new Mexican restaurant that just opened up. Wait said it's great.
I'm going someplace I shouldn't go, but when Mr. Colomarino was talking tonight about the RDA and the uncertainty that's out there, I know that he's correct. I talk to people on the street, and they don't know whether we're going to be having Winter Wonderland or pedestrian bridges or the City Hall, as you stated. And I wondered if when the city manager brings this forward with the other council members' permission, he could put things into something like a visual category that would be easily identifiable. That things that we know we won't be able to do go into a red column. Things that we might be able to do goes into a yellow column, and things that are definitely safe goes into a green column or some other means, so that it's very crystal clear to those that are in the audience and they understand immediately what's safe and what's questionable and what's dead. Does that sound like something the other council members would be interested in, and is this acceptable for the city manager?
I think it's real important that we get all the information out there that's available to us. It seems it's changing every hour. And I'll just kind of leap in here. I think next week, Councilmember Sturdivant and myself and the city manager will be going to Sacramento for the League of California Cities. We'll knock on some doors, and hopefully by that time when we come back, we'll have a little more information. But right now, it's all a gray area. But I think we could identify, like you did tonight, that the Rotunda building seems to be okay.
Certainly, we will point out if this work. Certainly, we'll try to point out those things that we are for sure, like the City Hall, or there is no for sure, I'm sorry. The things that we're pretty sure that will meet the AB 26. There are a variety of things, because this is evolving, and some things are going to be worked out by case law and by the controller actually rendering decisions and some of these things. So some of these we're going to be wanting to be more optimistic as we go to work with the Oversight Council and the City Council to see just how far what of the programs the agency will be able to continue or continue for some time. So we will really come with a more optimistic view at the next council meeting, and that will slowly turn down. So I'm not sure that it serves us well to say this is a green light, yellow light, red light, because some of the things that I might today think are yellow lights will survive the program, and I don't want to.
There you go.
And so you're going to put me in a position where I'm going to weaken potentially stronger projects just because of what we, how we're reading the law. When the law is really evolving, really like Mr. Colomarino pointed out, some of this is going to happen because many agencies filed it that way, or the controller makes a determination this way, or oversight councils start to make decisions. And some things are going to become clear. Oh, yeah, that's permitted in every agency, and we may not have realized it. So I think that things like we just talked about, some of those maintenance obligations are something like those, where there clearly is a redevelopment, blight-saving reason and protecting of the assets of the redevelopment to do those. And maybe the controller decides, you know what, those are out. They're out as February 1st, or maybe they last through June 30th. But if I start handicapping them, I'm afraid that it'll hurt us.
Perhaps the city manager's report could give us at least the good news, the things that have moved into
Absolutely.
The green columns every meeting.
I know Roberta makes a real good suggestion, but I think it's more important way to get it right. I mean, we're just in the infancy stages of this whole thing, and better to say nothing than to make a mistake. I think we need to get it right.
You're fine. Is there any other announcements or reports? If not, I'll go down to committee reports, and we'll start with Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley. Do you have any committee reports?
Well, I'll first touch on, we have the City Schools Committee hasn't met in some time. I know we will be coming there again. And I have had several constituents contact me about concern about gang issues. I've spoken to the chief, spoken to some of the folks at the school, and I would like to just at least have it as a topic on our City Schools Committee and continue to work with the chief. I know you've got some experience in this area, but I do think it's an area of concern to our community, and I want to stay on top of that. I've also let our community know we're in the same boat. I think every council member here, there's sometimes you go through where we're dealing with a lot of things on our plate right now. It's hard to get back to everyone and give the kind of attention you'd like to. It's some forced choice prioritization on some of these issues, and dealing with redevelopment and many other things is taking up a lot of our time. But we do listen when community brings up concerns and follow up at best. That anymore, we've considered what our options are, and they'll be considered at that time. The briefly on the San Luis Council of Governments has changed leadership. I have rotated off the executive committee, which is honored to serve on for a number of years, and Fred Strong from Paso Robles has taken over as the chairperson. Adam Hill has taken over as the vice chairperson. They tend to try to rotate that you have a board of supervisor member at one level and then a city council member at the other level and then kind of rotate north-south. So that's why we've had like we have had. One thing just that was concerned to us and other cities before is, you know, we had a little discussion about there's no process to have an alternate for the Regional Transportation Authority. So we did take action as a board to direct to get that fixed in the language of our rules so that we can have an alternate represent. That was a concern to several cities. Of course, there's always ongoing issues with council of governments affecting a lot of funding in our area. We've done very well as a city getting projects funded for our community. There are some other things, much like the bag ordinance, that sneak up on you on the IWMA. I just think that it's something that is of interest to me that's being talked about. More and more activity in the area of GIS, which is, of course, you know, the aerial photography and being used more and more by government overlaying with quite a bit of detail what's going on in your backyard. And I know they're looking, we do quite a bit in our city. There's some value in a lot of planning areas. But I think it's something as representatives we need to keep an eye on. I could see, I could see a lot in Jerry Clay's backyard, I'm sure, if we take a close look. But, I think it's something we should monitor as it's being discussed to have so much information overlaid and updated on a regular basis. So that is all I have to report on committees. Thank Hi. You.
Thank you. Councilmember Bonzi.
Thank you. There has not been an air pollution control district meeting in the last few weeks. There are some things coming forward there that will deal with the climate action plan and greenhouse gases. I will report to you the building industry has some concerns and as well, but it has gone to the design review committee, and we will be reviewing it again. We're about halfway done with it. The Local Agency Formation Commission, also known as LAFCO, is doing a city selection committee appointment on Friday. I will be applying and have applied to be placed on LAFCO. I will be running against the existing person who is on LAFCO. That's Dwayne Picanso from Paso Robles. Since he's the sitting member, I don't hold up a great deal of hope, but I would hope for your support. I'll give it my best shot.
Thank you. Brian?
Well, the only thing I have to report is that next week, Mayor Kelly and Wade and I will be in Sacramento for our League of California or League of California Cities Conference, and we're going to do everything we can to talk to every legislator we can about RDA and about the great things that it's been doing around our city and the individual lives that it has touched and the ones that they're touching now by shutting things down. And it's a personal story. It's you know, we look at sometimes these things are us against them and these big entities, but it comes down to people, the people that work, people that live, people that have bills to pay, businesses that are trying, that are struggling to make it, a city that we're trying to get economically revived and making it beautiful for businesses to want to come. So it's personal, and they need to see it as that way. So we're going to do everything we can while we're there to speak to that and to promote our city and just let them know about the great things RDA has done for us. So we'll going to do that next week, the three of us.
Thank you. Jerry, do you have any additional restaurant reviews?
You know, in regards to what Roberta is working on with the Air Pollution Control District, my son had an opportunity to go down to the Pismo Dunes, you know, and he'd never been there before. That was Joel, and he's darn near 50, but he was amazed. He said there was like 10,000 people there, and he was amazed of how much money that they pump into our community from the valley all the way down and all the way to Pismo. I mean, they buy their RVs and their four-wheelers, and they buy their supplies and stuff as they go along. So I know the Sierra Club is doing their damnedest to shut that down, and I hope that they're not successful. And, you know, you're the point person, Roberta, so get after them.
Thank you. I attended the county mayor's roundtable, and basically the topic of conversation there was the RDA. But to follow up on Jerry's there, we were also provided about a two-hour tour of the Oceano Dunes with the biologists and all the other people there, and they explained the areas. They close off, I think, about 300 acres a year, or almost 9 months out of the year, for the snowy plover and some other birds. They really do have it under control. If you ever get an opportunity to go down there, I'm sure they would be more than glad to share with you what they're doing. I did get quite a bit of documentation that I'll probably leave in the city hall here for you to look at, and it is a major economic issue. It's not just a Grover Beach or Pismo Beach issue. It should be an issue that all of us are concerned about because it does affect the whole county. So we'll stay on top of that. Basically, all the other committees I'm on have been dead over the holidays, and we'll get going. As the new appointed mayor, I do have the responsibility of assigning members to the committees. And I think with Roberta going to her hearing this Friday, I'll hold off till the next city council meeting when we get a little more stability in what our schedules are and everything, so everybody's not overworked. But for the most part, everybody's going to stay in the same positions that they have. I believe in the stability of it. I know when I came on the city council and went to committees for about the first 6 months, you just, you know, what are they doing here? Do I get to talk or what have you? And I think we have a real strong position right now in all of these committees, and we have become almost the benchmark city in the county for what we're doing, and I want to keep that stability there. So next city council meeting, if there are any changes, we'll announce those. And with that in mind, Do we have any individual determinations and or actions from any of the city staff?
No.
Okay. Russ? Okay. And with that, I'll adjourn the city council meeting, and then we have to go over and address the Tascadero Public Financing Authority. I think we need to have a roll call on that.
Board Member Sturdivant.
Here.
Board Member Clay.
Yes.
Board Member Fonzie.
Here.
Vice Chairperson O'Malley.
Here.
Chairperson Kelly.
Here.
All present.
Community forum. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak on this? If not, we will close the community forum. Are there any board announcements and or reports? With that, we'll move on to the consent calendar. Is there anyone on the city council that would like to pull anything on the consent calendar, or is there anyone in the public that would like to pull an issue? If not, I'll look for a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Board Member Fonzie.
Yes.
Board Member Sturdivant.
Yes.
Board Member Clay.
Yes.
Vice Chairperson O'Malley.
Yes.
Chairperson Kelly.
Yes.
5-0.
And with that,
passes.
I will adjourn the Finance Committee and the City Council meeting and call it a night. Thank you, everybody, for participating. Thank you.